we don't have music. I don't know if you've listened to the first two. There's no obligation, but we don't really have music. We just do mouth horns for the Saints Go Marching In to start the podcast. And then read on. So that's it. We will do our music mouth horns. You're free to join us.
Okay.
If you want to play along. After like the first verse, I'll just start talking and you can act, the two of you, sort of like a human fade. Mm-hmm. And then we will collectively bring you on as our guest. Perfect. All right. All right. So here we go. All right. 3, 2, 1. Hey everyone, welcome to episode 3 of City Saint Country Saint, a Saints podcast. We are 2-0, very exciting times here. Let me introduce my co-host, L. Ron Mexico.
Hey,
how are you doing, Ron?
I'm good. I think I'm getting worse at that. We might have.
That's okay.
You'd think I'd get better. So we might have to get some real music. That's got to be non-copyrighted written by now, right?
Yeah, it is. It's definitely public domain. Though,
wait up. So you were making me do this? I've been doing this for 2 weeks and we could have just spliced it in there?
Yeah, but then I have to splice it.
Okay, all right.
What's valuable here, though, is that it's impossible to actually get worse.
Okay.
It's also impossible to get better. And so it's basically the same theme every week.
Okay.
Our third horns this week, our guest is from the NFL Network, Patrick Claibon. Patrick, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks. I'm glad that I could have some musical stylings with you guys. Yeah. I definitely can't do better or worse because I have no talent. Like, I was trying to be the bass line, and then I'm like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing.
You were killing it. It was good.
So it's like, it was good. So we just had to freestyle.
Eventually, some week, someone is going to decide to like do percussion on their mic, and I'll be like, oh, now we're cooking. You know, we're Tremé. So welcome. We watched at home on our TVs. You were in studio for this game.
Yeah, we were broadcasting to our friends on the other side of the Atlantic Ocean. They have some different broadcast terminologies and rules and regulations in the UK. And so the myriad of commercials, because we love commercials over here, need to be covered. And so at random, sometimes when a billboard pops up in the middle of a broadcast, you know, sometimes they go split screen. It's like, okay, you're on camera. And it's like, oh, hey, what's up, people at 2 a.m. in London who are absolute football sickos watching this? We're going to talk about the game. And so we were able to have two games, and it was chaos. It was absolutely chaos.
Oh, my God. That's beautiful. That's right. Yeah. You had two games. So do they broadcast them both?
We did live look-ins for the Saints and the Panthers. The main game was Steelers-Browns. And fortunately, nobody missed any offense between the two games. So.
That's so cool about the ads. Like, because we have when I was watching from home, they literally had, I think the Saints was kicking our first field goal. My TV screen was a split screen ad for something else. Yep. And the game, the sound was for the ad, like Tide or something. And I had to watch the first score. I'm like, they don't put up with that across the pond.
They don't.
That's beautiful.
I'm just filling in because Kirsten Watson, who does our Monday Night Football UK, she also works for the Dodgers, and the Dodgers just can't stop winning. I'm filling in on that role, and it's a whole new world to me.
Yeah.
I'm used to the commercials.
Yeah,
like I'm very American.
And so is it just that they can't show any commercials during the broadcast, or they just have to cut the U.S. commercial feed?
I don't know, because you know my sources. I've got a couple sources on the island. Commercials. Do exist. They do have advertisements, but I think it's maybe something about our commercials.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it is crazy because like an NFL game is like over 3 hours, but the action is like 10, 12 minutes or something like that if y'all put it together. So to take up time where a score and play like a field goal where I still have to watch more ads here. It is crazy. But like what would they even have ads in England for? Like Doctor Who and like candy that tastes like unseasoned vegetables?
I don't know.
What are they even?
It's like basil coming to a store near you.
Yeah, and then you don't know if it's an herb or a person.
Yeah.
So So wait, I get to actually ask this without it being offensive, because the UK was for, you know, for, it was for broadcast overseas. I wasn't even supposed to be watching it. Who was in the studio with you?
Well, yeah, Monday, yesterday, actually, because all these days run together as we get into the season. Greg Rosenthal was with me, and Omar Ruiz was filling in for Maurice Jones-Drew, who was out sick yesterday. So Omar actually had the morning news shift. We found out that MJD was out. And then he stepped up and he was like, yeah, I'll come back. I'll go take a nap and come back. So Omar was literally at work all day. After being in Dallas on Sunday and just went Iron Man for us and was just chilling. And the show finished at like 4:27 a.m. in London. And by then, Omar had lost a button on his shirt and he was cracking jokes. He was loose. It was good. It was good.
So he was on scene. He was live over there.
No, he was with us. Yeah, he was in studio with us.
It's a long 2 days. Yeah.
And MJD, how's he doing?
He did sideline for the Rams because he does the radio broadcast for the Rams, and he was hurt. He was playing hurt on Sunday in that game against the 49ers, and he was wiped out. But, you know, that's MJD. Yeah. He'll bounce back. He'll shake back. We all do.
Yeah. You know, cortisone.
Yeah.
Get back on the field. Yeah. Oh, that's a good name to hear. I won his critique of all of the running in the Saints-Panthers game. Yeah. He's probably just throwing stuff at the screen. Hit the hole. Who was your rooting interest as a kid before you had to take the Switzerland position of a network affiliated?
Well, I'm very unfortunate that I've never been told to take that Switzerland position. I've always just had rooting interests as players. I never really, you know, I'm from Birmingham, Alabama. And, you know, if you guys know anybody from that 205 region, you get some Saints fans, you get some Falcons fans, you get like 7 or 8 total out of a million people, Titans fans. But they do exist, right? And so it's generally just like, who do I want to watch play? Like, who's exciting? Who executes at a high level, who makes plays. And so my fanhood has shifted allegiances over the years. Right now, I'm a Ravens fan. I'm an ardent Lamar Jackson supporter. I think anybody can pick up on that. And I openly admit it.
I will tell you, maybe I didn't tweet it, but I'm pretty sure I tweeted it. And if I didn't tweet it, I meant to tweet it. I wanted them to draft him so badly when he came out. And they didn't, and we just were, you know, Breeze had a few more good years, and it actually may have hurt Lamar Jackson's career if he had been drafted by the Saints. So it's definitely better for him that he went to Baltimore and got to start basically right away because he could, you know, but, you know, coming into New Orleans, you know, with like a local god starting at quarterback and still playing at an incredibly high level, it would have been probably bad for him, but I wanted him. It's not about what's good for him.
I think, you know, Sean wouldn't have minded having him. Clearly, you know, of course, going back, there's the Mahomes incident. Sean wanted Mahomes as well. I think it would have worked out. I think it would have worked out for either of them. I'm not necessarily, when it comes to certain players like Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson, I think you put him in a spot, whatever. Like Greg Roman's calling plays for the first 5 years of Lamar's career, and he's throwing, you know, 30-yard digs to Pat Ricard. And I think we've seen at the start of the season, it's like, hey, we don't have to do stuff like that. We could just have guys get open and then protect Lamar and see what happens. And so it's one of those things. Like we've seen Russ get better. Like, I mean, he finished the season better without Nathaniel Hackett last year.
Mm-hmm. Right.
As long as you're not getting Hacketed and you're you're in a functional
system. But I mean,
system.
It would have hurt his career because they wouldn't have sat Breeze.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But, like, I mean, sure, Lamar Jackson's a force of nature, but Drew Breeze is like a Hall of Famer who's still playing, and everyone is like naming their kids Drew in the city. Yeah. And so it's hard to sort of push him out. And so then you just get the problem of ending up at the wrong franchise at the wrong time. But, oh my God, the last 2 years of Breeze probably were not what you would have wanted, and I would have wanted Jackson to beat him out in camp.
Yeah, there was that tug of war, right, between Drew and the future, and then Sean and his future, And it kind of got
to
where
it's easier to not retire when you know that there's nobody to compete with you.
Exactly.
You know? And so maybe he'd have retired earlier if they had taken Jackson. Yeah. But God damn it, I wanted it. Everything people wrote about him as like questionable prospect was like, you know, you can just sort of see who's typing it, mm-hmm. and they've got a fish in their avatar.
Yeah, I mean, everybody doesn't have to watch college football. It's okay. Like if your job is to, you know, make comments about NFL draft prospects and you haven't watched a single snap of college football, you know, go fake it till you make it. But it's just like, we can tell.
Yeah.
You know, like we can tell.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's why I don't talk about draft stuff at all, is I don't watch college football like I used to. And even if I did, I was watching like two conferences, you know? And so when someone like Rashid Shaheed played at Weber State, hell, I have no idea what kind of a college player he was.
I don't even know what that is.
Neither did the rest of the NFL, though.
Yeah.
And that's
he got hurt as a senior.
But
so, like, he's one of those guys like Taysom Hill who went undrafted because their knee blew up right when that shouldn't have.
And,
you know,
because I tell guys, right, because prospects will slide into everybody's DMs. It's like, hey, you know, here's my tape, whatever. And sometimes people get passed on. Like, there's a million Rashid Shaheeds that never get an opportunity. And I tell them sometimes the process itself fails. Like, it's not that you've done some sort of failure. Like, the first time we saw Shaheed touch a football in the NFL, it's like, what was everybody doing?
Like, yeah.
Like, how did this almost not happen?
Yeah.
You know?
And remember, Michael Lewis was a beer man, you know, like our old kick returner we had. You know, he was delivering beer. And it was like, man.
Yep. Like, it's like Willie Mays Hayes just showed up. Just came in faster than everyone.
From Metairie, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that's what's crazy to me about guys like that dropping. Forget it, putting aside injuries. Is they're the ones who are just straight burners. And you think those are the guys who you're going to get like a flyer on. If they have good college numbers and then just like pure combine stuff. But the Saints have been historically good on UDFA stuff, which has been kind of cool because you like that kind of grinder shit where some guy you've never heard of, you know, like Hardy coming out of Assumption. These guys who are like, I don't even know how you ended up at Assumption when you're running like a 3.7 or something. Yeah. What are the teams that you're focused on today?
Well, we just finished NFL Fantasy Live earlier. It's gonna, you know, we air at 6 o'clock on weeknights, and we really just run through everybody, especially for fantasy purposes. You know, you'll get deep on the roster sometimes. I think it's hard to have like a laser focus. Of course, you know, the Ravens, because I'm genuinely a fan and I want them to be, you know, successful throughout the season. But, you know, the shows that I do span everything. The Sunday show that I do, Game Day Live, where we just do live highlights for the entire afternoon. I'm watching every game. I watch every game in the morning. I watch every game in the afternoon. We're doing highlights for every game the whole day. And so it's, you know, like arachnid eyes focused on everything. But through that, like everything and nothing at all. And so I end up missing out on some of the minutia and some of the the smaller like route concept stuff. You can't get into deep film dives, but you know, there's other people that get to do that. And I'm fortunate enough to get to do what I do.
And so did you come out of, like, were you an athlete in college or journalism in college or make your way through some combination or a school kind of?
Yeah, it was that combination. It was athletics that led me to Troy University. And then I
to where?
Troy University.
Oh, it's in Alabama.
Yep. The bottom right-hand corner of Alabama. we recently had DeMarcus Ware in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So I was down there. I eventually quit track and field and just focused on being a journalism student. And that was it. I knew I wanted to work in and around sports. I got a news job where I did some sports on the side. Then that turned into a sports job and another sports job. And here we are.
All right. So if you did track, what was your event in track and field?
I was a decathlete.
So Okay.
A lot like our football coverage, a little bit of everything.
I was going to say, who is faster, you or Joel Anderson? Because he is a track guy who posts about track all the time, but I think he was a sprinter.
Yeah, Joel was a sprinter. Joel definitely had me. Joel was the fastest kid in America at one point.
Yeah, I know. In his existence.
But yeah, there are some places where I would have had Joel. I might not have anybody right now.
Time comes for us all.
Yeah. The elixirs, you know, because we don't necessarily have a testing protocol. So, you know, I could hop on a cycle and we'll figure some things out.
So do we want to talk about this game?
Yeah, let's do it.
So what is going on with the right side of our line?
At a certain point, Charles, you hate to just say that this is what it's going to be. But when you saw Ruiz just get absolutely bulldozed yesterday, this just might be it. And it might be, you know, people could watch and they could look at the results and the totals and see that Derek Carr actually won this game with his lowest passer rating he's ever had in a win in his career. He was previously 0-25 when he was under 70 with a pass in his passer rating in his career. And so that's one thing where we could take back and we could say, okay, those Raiders defenses were never very good. The Saints defense is good. It's legitimately good. And if you just look at numbers and you're like, well, Jameis could do this, but also Carr's dealt with this whole being under siege issue before. Yeah. And you may occasionally in certain games not score as many points, you're not necessarily having the catastrophic errors, right? Mm-hmm. And so the thing that puts a lid on this offense, besides Alvin not being back yet, which is always going to be a problem, it's just up front. They might just not be very good.
Just signed, they gave Ruiz like 4 years on a second contract doesn't mean anything because they're always willing to like eat the bonus and get rid of you. But they just re-signed him for 4 more years and he was replacing Pete, who was looking washed the last couple of years.
Can they put Pete back in? I mean,
he's hurt.
Oh, he's still?
He's not even a healthy scratch, man. So I don't know. You know, but he wasn't the only one. They got Penning on skates a couple of times.
At least he hurt Shaq Thompson. That's the only good thing. Not good.
But he didn't even. He accidentally just got someone mad enough to get thrown. Like, Penning got someone mad enough to throw him into Shaq Thompson.
that's the one.
That is I mean, it's just an extension of every Saints practice where he gets into fights with his own teammates.
That was kind of the mark, right? It was like, yeah, this guy's a mauler coming in out of the draft. And it's been a struggle the first couple of weeks for Trevor Penning. And I think he could get better. And, you know, there's ways things could change. I think Alvin fixes some of it, but Alvin's not necessarily going to fix all of it. I don't think, you know, when you're a linebacker or a safety, if they shift the numbers in the box, somebody's like, oh, Tony Jones Jr.? Like, we gotta clamp down here. Like, nobody's doing that. This is going to be an issue for the entire season.
We basically have Kamara, who is suspended for 3 games, and then we drafted Kendre Miller, who spent most of training camp hurt, and I'm worried about him because he just didn't look great. But he was supposed to be a Kamara type too, and neither of them are playing. And so it's like we don't have any kind of short game. And so the whole first half, I thought he was like trying to get Michael Thomas killed because he's just running. Like he caught everything, but got just bombed immediately by, you know, some, you know, Panthers linebackers and safeties who were like out for blood, you know. Like, and so I really need someone to catch a ball in space.
It would be nice. Yeah.
Were they just not running Michael Thomas downfield? Because on the TV, you can't tell like where the route stopped. Because like he was just doing a lot of shorts. I mean, he had like 7 catches. He was mostly doing
shorts. There was the big catch down the sideline.
Yeah.
The one that was ultimately challenged and overturned on behalf of the Saints. But
yeah, though that was Olave.
The one where Michael Thomas.
Oh, no, the one where he landed on his butt. Yeah. Right.
And so I think, you know, a part of it, you know, that's the function of Michael Thomas's game and where he can win. But also, if Carr doesn't necessarily have the time to do those things, then he's like we saw at the end game, the ball that beat the Titans to Shaheed, where he's having to throw that early. It's like, all right, Shaheed, go. And he's throwing that early and letting Sheed run under it. As far as like the timing of having Michael Thomas run deep routes, considering the way that Ejiro Evero had the Panthers defense playing yesterday, and I don't know if there was time to do it.
Yeah. It's really funny for someone picked as high as Thomas was. He doesn't seem to have like the real burner downfield speed, but he'll cut on a dime and his hands are like the size of first baseman's mitts. And so everything he touches stays in his hands, which is just incredible.
And he could just muscle that ball away from, you know, the cornerbacks a lot. Oh, in his heyday that, you know, he was doing that, you know.
He was doing it yesterday. Yeah. Like, I was really happy to see him, like, back. You know, it'll be nice to see Carr start to build the rapport that Breeze had, because Breeze could throw to him blindfolded. And until he started aging, that was the thing to me. When I knew Breeze was cooked, people talked about his deep balls, but he hit those when people weren't expecting them. I knew Breeze was cooked when Thomas had to start reaching back for the ball.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't releasing like he did as a kid, and he didn't have the zip that he did as a kid, but his brain kept telling him that he could make those throws. Mm-hmm. And so Thomas kept reaching back and getting popped as soon as he caught it, instead of being thrown open and running with the ball. So I need Carr to get that timing back. You know, because that will be where the offense is. Once those slants start opening up into space. How about this is another thing that we don't see. What did the secondary look like? Obviously, no one was throwing at Lattimore. But the other side, I felt like Adebo was running behind people.
Yeah, I mean, Alante Taylor has looked really good to me early on in the season. Mm-hmm. I think that's the main takeaway. Was Taylor making another set of plays? Sometimes it's coverage. Sometimes, you know, ultimately you're not going to be able to shut down every single team, every single game. You know, Bryce Young, I think 61 of his, he finished with 100 and I'd have to look it up, 153 passing yards, and 61 of those yards came on that last drive. And so it's considering the problems that Carolina had on offense, I don't know how much we learned about that the secondary, other than now we've got two games on tape where Alante Taylor is real and Sean looks healthy. I got no issues with the defense at this point. You know, all the concerns on offense, and I think we just literally right when we started taping, we got an update on Jamal Williams, and it's not looking, maybe another week, according to DA. So
it's his hamstring, right?
Yeah.
If you come back too early from.
Right. Number one, you don't want to come back too early. But also, if it's only like a week or two, then you don't know what to do, because we're not desperate enough to sign Kareem Hunt because Kamara is coming back in 1 week. And so now, like, you've just got to, I don't know if, like, we bring Ellis Merriweather back, or I don't know, you know, because he was, like, our guy who looked like he might be a practice squad guy, and then they didn't even keep him on the practice squad, but he got a lot of work in the preseason for us as an undrafted guy. So I don't even know who's around.
We might just, can we just roll with Taysom like this again, right? I mean, it's going to be,
That was my big takeaway from yesterday. Was I've always felt there was a giant breaking case of emergency. And it just says Taysom at running back. And we finally got to see like Taysom actually take a carry as a running back. And it's like, okay, we're here now. This is a real thing.
Yeah.
But the update from DA was no timetable on Jamal Williams.
That's not.
And so it could take some time.
I'm glad you're breaking news on the podcast. But I wish it were better news. Yeah, I am not prepared to see Taysom line up at running back regularly. I think his best use is like in a mixed use where it's weird and he's hard to adjust to. Because I feel like when you know that Taysom is going to run, he gets hit in the backfield a lot. Like when they don't do it as a surprise, he gets hit. But when he lines up in the shotgun and they really do have to respect the fact that he can throw, or they have to respect the fact that he's going to go up the gut or run like an option and also kind of hits like a truck because he's bigger than anyone realizes, then, you know, it's sort of different. And if he's lined up just like as a running back, I don't think he's like better as a pure running back than a lot of guys you can kind of get off the shelf who've been running backs their whole lives, because you're also playing him on special teams.
Yeah. My thing is, because Taysom is so versatile, but then when you, if you want to get your best players on the field without 41, right? Because we're still waiting for Alvin to come back. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I don't want to take Juwan off the field. Rashid is making too many plays. You have to have Mike there. And then there's Chris. And I don't necessarily want to move folks around. If I can get Taysom, if I have to have Taysom at running back, maybe, you know, we run a toss, mm-hmm. we run a pass. We just keep it very simple. Just have him back there just to get him on the field, because he can catch a swing pass or whatever. That would be my only reason to have him there. Because I'm just, and maybe it's the fantasy football in me talking, but Tony Jones Jr. is not moving the meter. Yeah. To me, it's not happening.
Yeah. I don't think he had over 3 yards a carry, right?
He did not.
He got the touchdowns, but you know, he's almost like
he got two.
Yeah, he was like Jamal Williams would have done this and a little bit more.
Yeah,
clearly. Yeah. My friend wrote to me that he had Jamal Williams and he needed 6 points in fantasy. Yeah. And I was like, ooh, probably a good game to have the Saints workhorse back too. Sorry, man. All right, you went stone face. You're not allowed to talk about the gambling part.
No, we do our game day view every Friday. It runs Saturday and Sunday as well. We talk about gambling and lines.
Okay, good.
I'm just not allowed to set foot in a casino or talk about gambling and be paid for it, unless it's with the express written consent of the National Football League.
Of course. Well, let me assure Mr. Goodell that we are not giving him a penny.
Yeah, the shield is protected.
What are your thoughts? Where do you watch the game, Ryan? Yeah.
It was weird. Like, I'm finally coming to grips with our defense is really good. Because I keep saying, oh, you know what? It's we just been playing bad offenses teams for the last year and a half, just because I have this ideological block on like the Saints having a good defense because of the, you know, it's like it's like when you got a kid, right? And he's like a terrible kid, not terrible. It's like just some kid, terrible kid, only eats candy his whole life. And you give him an apple and he goes like, this tastes like a Jolly Rancher. And it's like, no, man, the Jolly Rancher's from the apple. Like the apple, because that's the real thing. So I think like, no, I got to stop thinking like, no, we're just playing bad offensive teams. Like our defense is really good. Like that's the truth. I'm just used to the other thing. And like, man, I haven't seen all the defenses in the league, but we got to be maybe the most talented, you know? So I think I'm going to switch my mindset. Like when I used to root for the Ravens when they had like the best defense, just because that was a team that was fun to watch when they could win a game 10-3. And like now I'm like, man, I might just embrace this. I might just embrace we're just the defensive team and our offense, whatever. If they give us 20 points, we'll win.
Yeah. But
that was my big epiphany. Like, all right, we good. We really are good. I've been saying it. I've been knowing it, but like I feel it now. I'm like, damn, all right, these guys are really, really good. And it felt bad because they were booing. The Panthers fans was booing, you know, the team, you know, on TV. And the quarterback's parents were there, which is like really terrible. Man, you don't want to. Yeah, come on, man. Don't do that. Like, he's just a young guy. It's like, our defense is really good. Don't boo. Like, they're trying hard, you know? Like,
yeah. Don't say this. I was just telling my wife that she can't say stuff like that when she's watching the game with me. I'm like, talk about the game, but you're not allowed to have any sympathy, you know? Yeah. Don Draper, that's what the money's for.
I did see Mike Tomlin's reaction because they asked him about the boos, and of course they were they were chanting "Fire Canada" last night.
Yeah,
and you know, Mike Tomlin's like, "Yeah, we want them to be salty and spoiled." we want fans to, you know. Maybe you'd like them to have perspective, but it's my question is, you know, if you're going there and you're just like screaming and jeering players, I just want to ask people like, do you think that's helping? Like, do you think that's making things better? Like, because if it is, like, hey, go for it. But
there's obviously lines you don't want to cross, and when people cross those lines, like, I fully support the players jumping into the stadium.
Yeah, they should do more of that. Yeah.
Right? Like, you know, I think about Jim Rice and those hockey things, and, you know, like a bunch of guys who just like gave some fan some work because they crossed the line, right? completely acceptable to me. This is where my ethics are. On the other hand, general booing at a team playing badly, I think that's the cost of doing business.
Yeah.
Like, you can't expect the passion for winning without also expecting, like, that emotional investment to have negative consequences when things aren't going right. And so you can't, like, I think as a player, like, you don't have to like it. You don't have to, like, you know, give an attaboy to the fans for, but I do think that sometimes, you know, if people are whining about it, it's a little unseemly. It's like you just lost 5 games in a row. You're the it cost $14 for a beer to get drunk and boo you. Like someone's mad now.
If I'm a player, though, I'm like, hey, there's a guy up there that's actually charging you. If you want to spin it around and boo that guy. I'm okay with that, too.
Yeah, well, he's got a gate in front of his house. Like, he's sitting behind 3 layers of security.
He's got a private arm.
For a reason. You know? And I can assure you, if I were given a chance to boo an owner, even a successful
I would
boo that man.
Yeah.
If you got me in a room with Robert Kraft, I'd boo that man.
I like made a deal with myself. Like, if I'm ever in an elevator with a person over a certain amount of money, it's just me getting out. Like, I just have to do that. Like, this is for the human race here. Like, but I'm not going to seek out that thing, but, like, that's just, you know, it sucks. You know, I got to do this.
At the very least, a false step out
at
of
least.
Room,
the bare minimum.
Just to see.
You have to try.
That's right. You gotta get people worried. I feel like I've seen too many field goals already. All right, Patrick, where do you think the improvement is in this team in the next couple of weeks?
It's definitely up front. I think that's because why would you change anything on defense with the way that this defense is playing? Especially, like, we've seen kind of a revitalized Cam Jordan with the rest of the defensive line playing the way that they are right now, which I think is an incredible sign. But I don't know whether it's schematically, whether it's play calling, whether you're prioritizing help for Trevor Penning in certain situations. But there's just there's some real issues up front. That's where things have to change. I think everything else is going to come along because, like, we were talking about Mike Tomlin talking about spoiled during the Sean Payton era, during the Peyton Breeze era. The Saints were incredibly good in the red zone, like to a historical sense for, you know, 15 years. And is it going to be like that? No. But, like, nobody ever has it like that.
Yeah.
But I do think things will get better. You'll get more touchdowns. Offenses are going to get better the league over. But this defense is still going to be good. I think 13 wins is not crazy. I think 10.
Yeah, it's a really soft schedule.
10 feels guaranteed at this point. I'm picking 13.
I don't want to jinx it, but I kind of feel. I feel like I've seen too many field goals already. I do like Blake Groupie, but I think I have already run out of times I can hear a new person tell me that he got stopped by security. It's like one of those things where, and I don't always get to say this because I'm not actually from New Orleans, but I think that the way broadcasts lean into Katrina at times verges on the offensive, where it's just kind of like maudlin and, you know, using other people's pain to build up emotion for fucking football, you know? And it's like, I don't like when, you know, too many people sort of speak on it if they're not, like, actually people who live through it. And so,
yeah, the only time it felt authentic was like that 2006 season, you know, like the Katrina was tied. It was tied to, like, I was a season ticket holder then, and it was tied to the whole thing. Like, it really felt like we felt like the team of destiny because of that. But ever since then, like, it, like, Katrina, the way it was treated, it just became commodified again. People were selling, like, Katrina tours. Yeah. You could get on a bus and they would take you around, like, Lakeview or the Night Ward or anywhere that flooded, or the East, wherever flooded real bad. And you would pay somebody, and they would just drive down the streets of ruined homes and, like, charge people money to look at that, you know? So, like, it became an immediate, people were selling t-shirts about it, and, like, it became, you know, Dr. Phil was flying down here to do stuff. Like, it was just, like, it just attracted all of that. So, like, I don't know. It's like 9/11, you know? Like, it's like, oh, they're just going to, that's like how 9/11 is now. It's kind of a funny joke, you know? Yeah, I mean, like, for,
yeah. I mean, that is what it felt. That is what it feels like here. Like, I get crazy when people who, because I grew up here and I was here on 9/11. And so I get a little crazy when people who weren't here just sort of want to wave that around, like in a kind of gimmicky way. I'm also the one telling inappropriate jokes, so I don't know if I'm.
Well, it's just one of those things, right? Like, if somebody. That, you know, had to relocate their family, had to move to Houston, right? If somebody wants to tell the story surrounding the Saints, then that person needs to be the one telling the story.
Yeah.
Like, you don't always have to invoke that. And, you know, if we're going to invoke September 11th in honor of, you know, trying to sell more guns or murder more people, it's just cut that out. You know, the people are dead. They can't speak for themselves anymore. So, like, just stop trying to sell stuff on somebody's grave, just in general, for everybody. Boy, that's the worst.
Talk about the whole, that's a microcosm for the country, you know? So you can,
that's, you know, it gets back, it's like a sort of a theme that comes up every week about how there's sort of this push-pull with football, where it's like a lot of the surrounding imagery is just kind of maddening. But the game itself is just so incredible that, like, you do, like, I'm as soon as the coin goes up in the air, I'm like locked in, and I'm like, that's it. I'm just gonna watch the best athletes in the world just crush each other because I just sort of respect all of that too much. Yeah. It's too much fun. You gotta gotta have beautiful more game. Than one. Yeah. Gotta partition it very carefully. So what's coming up? What's coming up in the season? Give me the schedule of when they could find you on the network.
Okay. Yeah. It's Wednesdays. NFL Fantasy Live is the next thing up for me. That's 3 o'clock Pacific, 6 Eastern. We're at 6 Eastern every night other than Thursday, which is a 5 Eastern because of Thursday night football. But I'm hosting on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Marcus Grant hosts on Friday. Kimmy Checks hosts on Thursday. On Friday, I'm hosting Game Day View, which is our gaming show. We're picking every game. Cynthia Freeland, who's our analytics expert, and Greg Rosenthal are going through making picks as well. And then on Sunday, if you want to, you know, if you're not necessarily ponying up the money for NFL Red Zone and you want to just watch the highlights as they happen, sometimes they're actually live. Don't tell anybody. Just watch us on Game Day Live and you can get the full experience.
So is that, that's like a watch party, basically?
It's a highlight version of Red Zone where all the highlights are new. Like, they're coming in. As soon as we get the highlight, give it to people. If there's a score, we're giving it to you guys. It may not be live, but again, don't tell anybody. Sometimes it is.
Right. But it's like you in the studio just sort of talking generally about what you're seeing and then something gets fed.
Yeah, it's me and an analyst. The first week it was Coach Pep Hamilton. This on Sunday it was Scott Pioli, former GM of the year. And you don't really see us.
He's the Chiefs, right?
Yeah. He's the Chiefs. He went to the Falcons. You know, he was on he was on the staff that drafted Tom Brady in New England. You know, he does the show with 3 Lombardi trophies behind him. He's a great dude, but you never really see us.
As you can't see this at home, but I also have
to. Yeah, who doesn't?
Right? In the closet.
They give those things out. It's like Halloween, those things. But yeah, you don't really see us. All you see is highlights, and we come on and say hello. We give you 3 hours of highlights, and then we come on and say goodbye.
Awesome. Patrick, you can find him. He's still just at his name, Patrick Claibon, Twitter, Blue Sky. We'll get him posting more on Blue Sky when Twitter goes down.
Yeah, it will be because I'm going to go down with the ship. But if there's a fee, if there's a fee, it's over. Charging for TweetDeck is one thing, but you know the whole app is he lost me.
It's getting so bad so fast. Yeah. It got no beat, no rhythm to it. Like the timeline, ever since the blue check people, you could see all their thoughts. They're just as bad as ads. You know what I mean? It's just like I can't. Yeah.
My secret is I do not see replies from anyone who either I'm not following or they're not following me. So everyone's like, my reply is all blue check people. I'm like, you can make them into it.
I've got 50,000 people blocked at this point. They've got this weird sycophantic relationship with legitimately one of the worst people on the planet. But you know that, you know, his Tesla almost took him out one time. You know, autopilot could come through for us to solve a lot of issues.
Yep. As soon as it becomes self-aware,
that's the first thing.
He's gone.
Maybe society becomes self-aware and we realize
these people aren't necessary. Yes, that is the goal.
There we go. We need. There we go. We have come full circle back to the actual meaning of woke, man. All right. You have any closing thoughts?
I think we covered everything, man. Patrick, thanks for coming on. This was a treat. This was awesome. Thanks.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right. Thanks for Ron, Patrick. This is Charles. See you next week after Green Bay.